Hello and welcome to the Delta Capita podcast about the refugee crisis. I'm Sarah Steers and today I'm joined by some guests to discuss this topic to commemorate the occasion. Firstly, we have Diane Eshleman with us, Delta Capita's Chief Sustainability Officer. We also have Niall Al-Majzoub, who is our colleague and who is also a refugee. We also have Tony Story with us, our Global Charity Lead, and finally, Jamal Francis, our US Sustainability Champion. Let me start by saying thank you to all of you for taking the opportunity to recognise World Refugee Day. Hi, Diane. Clearly, this is a complex global issue that has affected people and regions across the world for a very long time.
That's right, Sarah. But let's face the fact that this issue has become even more acute over the past several years. It is a humanitarian crisis that has resulted in enormous suffering for many, many millions of individuals who've had to relocate from their homes due to war, persecution, other forms of violence. And let's also face the reality that it's an issue for both the host countries and the countries of origin.
Of course, yeah. So what are we looking at in terms of numerics?
Well, the data from 2021 shows that nearly 90 million people were forcibly displaced worldwide. And amazingly, 41% of those individuals were children. This is the highest recorded number of refugees since the Second World War. But the situation is even more severe in 2023. According to a recent report from the United Nations, the number of refugees has increased to over 103 million people, mostly originating from five countries: Syria, Venezuela, Ukraine, Afghanistan, and South Sudan.
Wow. And what are the drivers for this increase?
Well, it's very complex. Clearly, the biggest contributor is warfare. In the case of Ukraine, it's obviously due to the Russian invasion. Similarly, in Syria, the conflict that started in 2011 has left hundreds of thousands of people dead and left the survivors without essentials such as food and clean water and health care. In South Sudan, the conflict between the Sudanese military forces has called millions of people to flee. It's a really tragic situation where the majority of those who are impacted are women and children who are the survivors of violence and sexual assault.
Well, it sounds like war is driving millions of people away from their homes. Would you agree?
I do agree. You're absolutely right. But military conflict is certainly not the only contributor to the global refugee crisis. For example, religious persecution is another factor. I'll give you a couple of examples. In Myanmar, persecution of the Rohingya Muslims has been going on for decades. But just in recent years, more than 700,000 ethnic Rohingya were forcibly removed from their homes. And the violence is continuing even today. Another obvious example is Afghanistan. The Taliban have conducted a campaign of violent persecution. And two-thirds of the people are in need of protection and humanitarian assistance. 70% of those people are women and children. In addition, there are political and economic factors at play. For example, more than 6 million refugees and migrants have fled from Venezuela as a result of the political turmoil and economic instability there. So just to sum up, when it comes to the refugee crisis, the bottom line is that many millions of people have been displaced by a combination of war, religious persecution, politics, economic instability, even the climate crisis, which ironically is causing issues with both flooding and drought in various regions. So as I mentioned earlier, this creates enormous challenges, not just for the countries from which these people are fleeing, but also for the host countries who really struggle to find effective solutions for the influx of people who need their help.
I mean, those numbers are truly shocking. I hadn't realized that it was the highest since the Second World War, especially given that there isn't a global conflict happening at the moment.
And personally, I would never have thought to connect it to the climate crisis. It's typically when we think of refugees and asylum seekers, we often think of the persecution conflict portion of it. But I thought it was pretty interesting and amazing that, you know, due to famine, drought, and other like climate related crises, that this also was an impact as well. Truly fascinating, I think, and interesting.
So is it predicted that as the climate crisis worsens, that this will continue to impact the number of global refugees?
Absolutely. The impact of climate change is having severe consequences for both housing and agriculture. People are being forced from their homes as a result of flooding, and the drought that has impacted so many regions worldwide is causing severe issues with famine.
Thanks, Diane. Clearly, this is a huge global issue, and later we're going to spend some time talking about possible solutions. But first, let's take the opportunity to speak with one of our DC colleagues who has first-hand experience as a refugee himself. Hi, Neil. Thank you very much for joining us today to discuss your experience of being a refugee. It would be really useful for us to start by understanding your background. Firstly, can you talk to us about where you came from and what life was like when you were still living in Syria?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me today. Well, I'm Syrian from Damascus, which is the capital city. Back in time, we used to have like a business opportunity. We had a commerce and we used to socialize with my friends, family, and the most important, I used to have like an emotional support. I finished from Damascus, I had finished my diploma in business administration, a bachelor degree in finance, and a 5 years experience.
Thanks, Niall. And can you tell us what happened in Syria, which meant that you had to flee your home country?
Well, actually, the conflict, the war that happened in Syria, like forced Syrians to travel, to flee. We have children, we have elderly, we have people looking for a new opportunity, just like me. I'm looking with a hope for a better future. And actually, it's still the same today.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your journey then, if we can. If you could tell us what happened after you left Syria, what was the journey like?
Well, actually, it was a hard journey. I traveled through like Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, trying to find work, to settle down and start over. You know, it's not that easy, especially to secure a job or to find like a work permit. It wasn't easy as a Syrian refugee to be there or to be accepted by the community there. Even when I went to Turkey in the end, I discovered that there was like a new UN scheme for resettlement plan, which I was entitled for, especially if I'm staying in the third country. That time, I remember that I applied for that resettlement plan with the hope in a better future. And actually, after like 5 years, I have received like two offers. First one, which is to stay in Turkey because I secured a job and I get citizenship, or to get like a resettlement plan, which is in the UK. It was a hard decision for me, to be honest, but in the end, I chose to go to the United Kingdom, which is the best place for me and better opportunity for a work in the future.
Thank you, Niall. And so once you arrived in England, what happened? Can you tell us more about that and how life is living in England now?
Yes, of course. Actually, I arrived in 2019. I was enrolled directly as a like UK government resettlement plan. I was holding like a leave to remain, which is like I stay in the country for 5 years with a work permit. And after 5 years, I'm entitled to take the citizenship. After I received like support from the government and from the council, but after a year, I decided to do like a master's degree in finance and business administration. Unfortunately, at that time, because I was entitled for like student loan, all the support stopped from me. So I had to proceed for that. During that time, I started working as like an interpreter as a self-employed, so I can cover like my daily expenses. And I took the student loan to cover the tuition for my master. In the end, actually, I graduated with distinction. And during that time, actually, I started applying for a job and looking, which you should consider that being a Syrian refugee, it was really hard, especially in the finance industry. While everybody was telling me, maybe you won't be able to do that. You need someone from inside. It's a new culture. It's a new like economy. It's a new country. So actually, when I heard back from Delta Capital, which it was like a moment of change in my life, I had my first interview, and after a week, I received a call from them asking me for like 3 days to join the bootcamp. That time, I still remember I didn't have money to go to commute to London, actually, or to attend the bootcamp. I start to contact like charities or like the job center or like some council. No one believed in me, actually, because they asked me the question, what are the opportunity or what are the chances to get accepted? I told them zero, because in the finance industry, I'm not sure if they will accept me as a Syrian refugee. So I had to send my laptop in the end, and I joined the 3 days like bootcamp. And in the end, I was selected to join Delta Capital. And I've been in Delta Capital since August as an analyst.
Wow, it's so remarkable that you had to sell your laptop in order to go to the boot camp, but it shows your dedication and your resilience to keep fighting until you got the role that you deserved and know that you wanted to do. So that's amazing. How would you describe your journey as a refugee today, as I understand that you do still have refugee status today?
Yes, exactly. I still have like a refugee status. I won't be lying, it was like a really hard journey. I always ask myself, from where I've got the power to survive and move on, the energy to wake up every day, smile, and hope for a better future full of opportunities. In some points, I told myself that I can't do this anymore. I won't be able to be doing it. But every day, I prove to myself that I actually have done more than what I was expected. Maybe because when I left, I still remember when I left Damascus, my mom told me, I raised the man, now is the time you need to prove it. I didn't understand what she was saying, but now I understand every word she told me about.
I have a question, if I could interject. What is the status, Niall, of your family? Do you still have a lot of family members who are in Syria? And based on what you said about your mother's comment, your family must be very proud of what you've accomplished.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yes, my dad and my mom, they're still in Damascus. I'm seeing my mom like the last time, it was like 6 months ago in Germany, because she can't make it to here. My dad, I saw him last time in 2010, unfortunately, because he cannot travel outside of Syria. My siblings, my biggest brother, I saw him 2009 last time. My twin brother, I saw him 6 months ago. So it's kind of hard, yeah.
Wow, you certainly are a resilient spirit.
Thank you so much. Yes, I'm always trying to, you know, it's like I feel like I have a job to support refugees, because nothing is like impossible, especially when I came to here and I saw the struggles and everything and the stigma that's following the refugees, that you cannot do anything in this world. You are a refugee. You are a guest here. You are useless. You should take only the benefit and stay like this. So I feel sometimes that it's a kind of job for me to guide refugees and show them that there is always a hope. There is always a window you can look at. You can see the light for that.
Very inspiring.
Yeah, it's just so interesting and enlightening for us to gain insight into your experiences, Niall. You know, as you explained that you have a drive to try and help other people too, if you could just tell us a bit more about that, it would be fantastic.
Yes, actually, during COVID-19, I remember that I was asked to be isolated due to the health problem. I was isolated for 9 months and I was alone by myself. During that time, I started like going to because I'm an artist as well, so I started painting as a therapy and a way to express my feelings. The thing that I did the last 2 years, then the first during the World Refugee Day, each year I'm participating in an exhibition to show refugees the way of how to express their feelings through art and to prove the suffering or the loneliness that the refugees are facing. I had the first one with the body projects, and the second one I did it actually with the clear voice. And this year actually as well, I'm participating in an art exhibition with the Refugee Action. And I also as well, I'm participating in some charities because for refugees, I'm teaching them English. And I'm helping them to get to have like a career focus during this time. It's like you can say it's like mentoring and guiding them. which is, I'm proud of that as well. And in Delta Capita, actually, I joined like recently, it's like community for charity to help refugees or to help like young people how to draw their future or their like career path as well.
Yeah, language is a huge barrier for refugees around the world. It is very common for people who cross national boundaries to find themselves in a host country where they can't even have a conversation because they have that language barrier. The fact that you're willing to help with people overcoming that obstacle is really important.
Yeah, and especially as you obviously didn't have the same support when you came over here yourself, that it's so wonderful that you still want to put yourself out there and try and help other people as much as you can, knowing that you would have benefited from that support yourself, I imagine, in your journey when you came over here.
Actually, because I suffered from this kind of issue when I traveled from Syria, so I don't want others to suffer from what I suffered. That's why actually I'm helping them, because I had to deal with those issues before, but I don't believe that somebody can deal with these issues now. So that's why I'm helping and supporting them.
Well, it's very inspiring to hear from you and extremely interesting and enlightening. I'm sure we can all agree. Thank you so much for spending the time to share your story with us. And I know that we've only really scratched the surface about your journey. I'd now like to pivot over to a conversation with Tony and Jamal, who are going to be discussing how we can begin to address the refugee crisis.
Yes, in the closing section of this podcast, we'd like to talk about the ways in which we can help improve the situation. The seriousness of this complex issue can often leave us feeling overwhelmed by it all, leading to a sense of a sort of paralysis where we feel so overwhelmed that we are no longer wanting to learn about the issue or help just because the challenge feels too great to overcome. A way in which we can try reduce this feeling is by identifying those specific ways in which the issue is being addressed. So through the actions of international organisations such as the United Nations Refugee Agency and non-governmental organisations, but also through firms, communities and as individuals. This is a complex issue that requires thoughtful collaboration among multiple players to solve it, but that doesn't mean we should feel like we cannot make a difference, even if that is just helping in whatever small way we can. To discuss how we can improve upon the situation, I'm joined by Jamal Francis, our New York sustainability champion, who has been a key in the New York response to World Refugee Day.
Thank you, Tony. I think there are several ways that we can address the situation. And I think firstly, we need to change the narrative. People often think that refugees and asylum seekers and so forth are trying to escape some sort of like legal issue or they're criminals and so forth. But, you know, let's face the facts. These are all, we're all human beings, right? And these are human beings seeking a better life out there. So that's the number one thing I think we need to look at, change the narrative. With all that in mind, I think it's wise to quickly run through how like certain international organizations are working to remediate the refugee crisis globally. There are multiple governments, NGOs, and international organizations out there, and the World Bank provides assistance through immediate humanitarian aid to refugees by offering shelter, food, clean water, healthcare, and education. Like, for example, the World Bank, for instance, they're pretty much works with various different refugee hosting countries to include long-term refugees in national support systems. They also offer assistance through conflict resolution, peace building, by supporting peaceful negotiations to essentially resolve conflicts, which, as Diane mentioned earlier, are key contributors to the crisis. I think it's also important to point out that working to address underlying social economic factors, that they create initiatives to reduce poverty, inequality, and social exclusion, which are often drivers of displacement.
No, I agree. And more locally, there are also several ways in which firms can make a positive impact in supporting refugees within their new host country. So formally, firms can provide employment opportunities by implementing inclusive hiring practices. They can also create internship and training programs to allow displaced individuals to get work experience within the host country. And I think at this point, I want to ask Niall about this, because he mentioned a bit earlier in his interview how getting experience and trying to get a job when you first move to a host country can be quite a challenge. Are there any ways you can think of to try break this barrier? We've mentioned their training opportunities. Is that enough?
Well, I would say not only like training opportunity, I would say like helping people more to interact in the cultural things more than training. I would say also as like enrolling in like educational or degrees more than courses, because you know some courses you can do like an HDL or any kind of skills. We need like people, need refugees with degrees to contribute to the community so they can prove they can be a taxpayer, they can like proceed with the community, interact as well. Anyone can have like a training degree, but as a I would prefer if we said like an academic degree, which will help refugees as well to contribute in the community and in the company, especially because, you know, the financial system is going beyond as we are going for like artificial intelligence and everything. So we need like refugees to be prepared for the future, to be ready for what's coming on. I would say as well, you know, as I was speaking about my experience when I came to the country and when I decided to do a master and to get like beyond what was expected from my side, I was out of money. In some points, I didn't have any finance to pay rent or at least food. Why? Because I decided to go beyond. I decided to prove that I can take a master's degree, I can work in finance. So I think if we focus on this kind, not to put refugees on limits, that you need to be only studying English or like studying the basics like e-learning or learning or anything so you can have a support from the government. I think if we give them like more way, or we push refugees more for like a higher degrees with the support provided, I think we will see something different from the new refugees who's coming to the country.
Thank you for that. So what I'm hearing is that we definitely need more of a holistic approach in our support. And one of the key things that keep popping out to me in my reading is this kind of encouragement of awareness and advocacy throughout kind of society, and particularly within firms and culture. And I have been personally very impressed with DC's response to this in their progress to raising these issues. This is a perfect time to come to Jamal, because Jamal has been working incredibly hard within the New York office to educate his staff and also engage them in volunteering.
Yes, and thank you again. Niall, I must say you're truly an inspiration. A lot of the work we're doing surrounds many of the stories and your personal experiences that we're doing here in New York. For instance, we've decided to start a donation drive. We're working with a grassroots organization, Team TLC, who essentially take those clothing and supplies and necessary items, because we also have to remember that a lot of the refugees and so forth who came, who moved on, or moved on with only the clothes they have in their backs, right? So we're working with an organization to help give those clothing support. And we've also committed to volunteer with them to see it through to the end. And they have this organization or shop they call the Little Shop of Kindness. And with immigrants and refugees, they go there and they do what's called free shopping. All right, so that's one thing that we're doing, and you know, it's really near and dear to my heart as well, because I often try to help people remember that they're not refugees, they're not asylum seekers, they're human beings, and as human beings, we need to help and look out for one another. We're also spending time volunteering with And it's also, and again, like I said, your inspiration, because I started working with this organization called Upwardly Global. And what they do, their role is to try and eliminate employer barriers through offering employment services, mock interviews, language coaching network, et cetera. And as I was going through some of the resumes, like I was truly impressed, you know, and this is where it comes from, looking at refugees as human beings. Some of the folks that just by looking at the resume, I would hire them on the spot, right? But unfortunately, because of their status, there, you know, there's difficulty there. So I'm glad that you're kind of, you know, the end result, the positive end result of such services, such as working with Upwardly Global and so forth. And lastly, we're also working with another organization called Children in Conflict, who essentially work to provide funding and proceeds to children who are impacted by political conflict and other various like high conflict zones, such as Venezuela, Syria, and many other countries that Diane mentioned. And even going back to the statistics Diane mentioned, there was a very large number of children. So I thought that was very important that we also play our part in also helping those children as well too. Because the other thing is, when a lot of the refugees come over, sometimes they're displaced from their parents. And when I heard that you talking about, Nael, about you not seeing your parents and your family for such a long time, that really hit me to my core. And I'm happy that we're doing something about it, at least to try and improve, right? As we go and working as an organization and individually as well to spread the awareness, to change the narrative, and do whatever we can to help our fellow human beings.
No, that's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear New York, the New York office is so engaged with this. Another office that I wanted to mention briefly is Wrexham. So our regional sustainability champion, Dane, has arranged for a presentation on the 22nd by a woman called Jane from a charity called United to Assist Refugees UK. This is a local Wrexham-based charity helping refugees who come to the UK. So Jane, during this, will explain what it's like for refugees via a mix of presentations, videos, games, and a guest speaker from a woman who's been helped by this charity. So just another example of some of the great work our colleagues are doing across the firm. And taking inspiration from your work, Jamal, we are now also hoping to host a collection in the London office. Now, this collection is going to start on the World Refugee Day itself, so the 20th. For all those who are in the London office, please look out and dig deep.
That's awesome. I'm happy that we were able to inspire. Now, Nael, I personally love working for DC. I've been here for less than a year myself, and I've been treated very well here. Overall, I'm curious to know how has your experience been since you've started working for DC overall with the company?
Well, throughout Sundown, actually, Delta Capital has stood by my side with unconditional support mentally, and they give me like a chance for like professional growth. Actually, they give me like a culture where I can thrive, where I can give my best. I always tell them I may have like came to England alone without a family, but I found a second family in Delta Capital.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. So to summarize, I'm going to do a bit of a quick fire round. Personally, I think as individuals, we can help in three ways. So volunteering, donating, and educating both ourselves and others. I want to use this opportunity to go around each of the panelists and just ask, if you had to pinpoint one thing you can do as an individual, one powerful thing, what would you say it is?
I'll go. I would say, despite the magnitude of the crisis, despite the complexity of the current world situation, I think we as individuals need to acknowledge that even helping one person or helping one small group of people who are struggling in this current environment will make a big difference. I think it's important for us to realize the impact you can have despite the complexity and scope of the crisis. One person by itself can make a big difference. Jamal?
Yeah. Tony, I think you've kind of just hit it on the nail in terms of what we can do by volunteering. And volunteering doesn't always necessarily mean working with a different organization to give your time to, you know, to do whatever is needed to support. It could also be a simple email to your local government, right? There are many different ways to do that. You can go to your local government website. They're usually drafted templates for those already. And there's like working with other organizations. There's another one that came to my International Rescue Committee, and they give you a template or kind of a format where all you got to do is put in your name, read through the contents, make sure you're satisfied with it, and it goes directly to the government. So small things like that are absolutely very critical and impact us. Let's face it, the government helps create society structured the way it is. So, but volunteering is absolutely a key way to do it as well. How about you, Sarah? What are your thoughts?
For me, I would say hosting events such as the podcast that we're hosting today is a great way that we as individuals can help to raise awareness of the crisis, because doing things individually is great, but if we raise more awareness, then we can spread the message that to everybody else who might not be aware that there is such an issue going on, and hopefully inspire other people to try and get involved themselves to help out as well.
Niall?
Well, I would say for me, as a refugee, I'm doing my best to remove the stigma which is sticking with refugees, because, you know, I could say like the bad media created a big picture for refugees, like because they are the reason for like economic crisis, they are criminals or everything. So I would say, as a personal like experience, treat everyone, even refugees, as a normal. We are not criminal. I'm not criminal. I didn't decide to travel or leave my country or leave my family or anything to do. It wasn't in my hand, but I was forced to do that. And in the same time, I'm being here. I'm taxpayer. I respect all the laws and I'm paying for all the regulation here. But don't show others or even refugees that they are different, because it wasn't an easy decision, or it wasn't like an easy choice to leave everything behind and start over. Starting over wasn't easy for me at all. For each country I'm going, the language, the culture, to prove I'm different. And I will highlight something that maybe providing like an emotional support for refugees, because you won't understand what actually when you need a hug or when you need something to say like, I'm by your side, how does it mean to refugees? Because I've been in that place where I was hoping to find like someone to say like, I'm by your side and everything will be okay. So I would say like being a human to refugees is the best actually we can do.
Niall, you said more eloquently what I was trying to say, which is you can really make a big difference by embracing an individual or a group of individuals and helping them feel welcome. Building on what you said earlier, Jamal, I have to concur with you on the point of raising awareness with politicians and government agencies. Politicians are going to focus on issues that their constituents care about. And if we can prove to our political representatives that this is an issue that's important to us, it will become an issue that's even more important to them.
Thanks, Diane. Yes, so that really closes out the podcast for today. Thanks very much to all of our guest panel. It's been a really interesting and enlightening discussion to have with you all. And thank you to our listeners